Greetings, and welcome to Profound Medical Corporation's second quarter 2018 conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Stephen Kilmer. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Let me start by pointing out that this conference call will include forward-looking statements regarding Profound and its business, which may include, but is not limited to, expectations regarding the efficacy of Profound's technology in the treatment of prostate cancer, uterine fibroids, and palliative pain. Such statements are based on the current expectations of Profound management. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed in this conference call may not occur by certain specified dates or at all and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risks and uncertainties affecting the company, including risks regarding the pharmaceutical industry, economic factors, the equity markets generally, and risks associated with growth and competition. Although Profound has attempted to identify important factors that could cause actual actions, events, or results to differ materially from those described in forward-looking statements, there may be other factors that cause actions, events, or results to differ from those anticipated, estimated, or intended. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and Profound undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise, other than as required by law. On the call today representing the company are Dr. Arun Menawat, Profound's Chief Executive Officer, and Aaron Davidson, the company's Chief Financial Officer and Senior Vice President of Corporate Development. With that said, I'll now turn the call over to Arun and Aaron.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our second quarter 2018 conference call. On behalf of the management team and everyone at Profound, I would like to thank you for your ongoing interest in our company, and for those of you who are shareholders, we appreciate your continued support. I will turn the call over to Arun in a moment for an update on our commercial activities. However, before I do, I'd like to provide a brief update of our 2018 second quarter financial results. For the three-month period ended June 30th, 2018, the company recorded revenues of $213,000, with $171,000 coming from the sale of products and $42,000 from installation and training services. This did not include any new system sales. It compares to $957,000 in the same period last year, which in contrast was driven primarily by the recording of revenues from the sale of three TULSA-PRO systems in Europe. With respect to our costs, our R&D expenditures were $70,000 lower for the 3 months ended June 30, 2018, compared to the same period in 2017. The decrease in overall R&D spending was primarily driven by decreases in clinical trial costs, materials and consulting fees of $553,000, $59,000, and $170,000, respectively. These costs were lower as a result of the completion of the TACT Pivotal Clinical Trial Enrollment Initiatives and our insourcing manufacturing project. Partially offsetting these amounts was an increase in salaries and benefits and rent by $357,000 and $80,000 respectively, due to a higher number of R&D personnel and new facilities in Finland. Amortization of intangible assets increased by $273,000 related to the Sonalive transaction and amortization of the acquired intangible assets. G&A expenses for the 2018 second quarter were higher by $508,000 compared to the 3 months ended June 30, 2017. Consulting fees and share-based compensation decreased by $103,000 and $205,000 respectively due to the decreased legal fees in the 3 months ended June 30, 2018 compared to the prior year, and a decrease in share-based compensation expense in the 2018 second quarter due to a one-time award to company executives in 2017. These costs were offset by an increase in salaries and benefits and travel by $673,000 and $61,000 respectively due to increased G&A personnel bonus payments, and salary increases. Depreciation expense increased by $79,000, primarily due to leasehold improvements for the company's new facility that were constructed in the latter part of 2017. Overall, the company recorded a Q2 2018 net loss of $5.8 million, or 5 cents per common share, compared with a net loss of $4.7 million, or 8 cents per common share, for the same three-month period in 2017. As at March 31st, Profound had cash of $32 million. Subsequent to quarter end, Profound announced that it entered into a term loan agreement with the CIBC Innovation Banking Group. The loan has a term of 48 months and bears interest at CIBC's prime rate, currently 3.45%, plus an additional 2.5% per annum interest rate, with a monthly interest-only period for the first 15 months, which may be extended to 21 months under certain circumstances, followed by equal monthly installments of principal and interest. Profound intends to use the proceeds to repay its current debt, including the remaining balance under the April 2015 loan with Knight Therapeutics, which bears interest at a relatively high rate of 15% and for working capital purposes. To sum up the benefits of this transaction, it allows us to consolidate our debt with one banking partner and lowers the overall cost of capital compared to our previous term debt obligations. It also effectively and flexibly adds to the working capital available to the company as we scale the business going forward. With that, I will now turn the call over to Arun.
Thanks, Aaron. Let me start with a business update. As I have previously stated, we're in a pilot launch with Tulsa Pro in Europe. Last year, in the very initial phases of our pilot rollout in Europe, most of our revenues came from capital device sales. We sold equipment to a few opinion-leading hospitals and researchers without procedure volume commitments. This was a good strategy to start as it provided for initial revenue for Profound, and it also provided the equipment to hospitals who will publish their work and add to the body of clinical knowledge on TULSA-PRO. While we're proud that a number of teaching sites in Europe used R&D dollars to acquire our technology, we also know that it is not a sustainable business model for the long run. Beginning in 2018, our focus has been on establishing a recurring revenue-based business model for the TULSA technology in Europe. Simultaneously, we believe Sonalee is a capital sale revenue opportunity in Asia, particularly in China. This is our current market introduction strategy, but we also do expect to be flexible with our commercialization strategy at this stage for the company, and will continue to sell TULSA Pro as capital where it makes sense, or place Sonalee on a usage model where it makes sense too. Directionally, over the long haul, we expect to build a company that derives most of its revenue from recurring sources. Coming back to TULSA, the best way for us to describe how the adoption is coming along is to share an example with you. As you know, the science of our technology is sound, but the available clinical data has been limited so far. One of our first customers in Europe started with one patient case a month, treating only a limited population of patients with early stage disease, typically Gleason 6 or early 7s. In fact, they refused to do any other patients. They gained experience and confidence, and then broadened the profile of patients they were treating to BPH, which is non-cancerous on one end of the scale, and to Gleason 8, which is higher grade of cancer on the other end. They're now routinely doing 3 cases in a day per week, and possibly will get to 4 in the future. On the business side, they have become so confident that they have already given us an order for 80 patient kits. We did not ship all at once and did not recognize the revenue in Q2 as it represents more than a quarter's worth of usage. But it obviously bodes well for the future, especially since they are now also talking about expanding to other clinics. As we have discussed in the past, instead of spending to grow our sales team and placing a lot of devices that would be difficult to support without more clinical data, at this stage, we're investing in properly developing our sales methodology and testing our business models. As well, we're working to ensure access by working to establish reimbursement. Based upon the success of the case study that I described earlier, we have authorized our sales team to initiate a recurring revenue sales pilot by placing Telsa Pro with a limited number of qualified early adopters who will be required to place certain procedure volume commitments. Since we currently receive about $2,500 per patient for disposables, we think this could be profitable relatively quickly on an individual install-based basis, but could also be a driver of faster adoption during our early commercialization phase, which, as I have said, is a higher priority at this time. On a short-term basis, though, this hurts the top line as the bigger ticket upfront capital sales are foregone. Indeed, we have not booked any capital revenue so far this year. But that doesn't mean our distribution partners, Philips and Siemens, haven't been selling. The Siemens agreement was initiated a quarter ago, and their sales team are being trained at this time, and we do expect sales through Siemens in the future. With respect to Philips, our primary focus has been on Asia, China in particular. Similarly, since we received CFDA approval of Sonalive in May, the pipeline for capital sales in China has also started to build. We believe that Sonalive is well suited for sale in China, and we are especially pleased that Philips will function as our distributor there, as they have a well-established presence and a substantial market share of the MRI market in that country. Both Ian Heinen, our new Senior VP of Sales and Marketing, and I have separately visited China and have validated our assumptions. We do expect sales of Sonalive in the second half of this year. Bringing it all together, we expect our sales will be more of a blend of capital, disposable, and pay-per-click in the second half of 2018. We believe that will translate into higher overall revenue in H2 compared to H1. We also believe that our methodical approach to developing the business model will put us in a much better position to market our products when we enter our key market, the United States. I would like to focus the rest of our opening remarks today on advancing the development of Telsa Pro towards successful commercialization in the United States, and in particular, our TACT trial. We believe that the most important news of the quarter was the release of the preliminary primary endpoint data that was presented by Dr. Klotz at the American Neurological Society meeting on May 21st. For any new participants on our call, TACT is a prospective, open-label, single-arm pivotal clinical study that is designed to further evaluate the safety and efficacy of Telsa Pro to ablate prostate tissue in patients with localized organ-confined prostate cancer. While we were originally targeting enrollment of 110 patients, due to the strong momentum going into the final days of recruitment, we enrolled 115 patients. Dr. Klotz's presentation included PSA nadir on all 115 patients, as well as information on serious adverse events from the full study. The data is available in the Journal of Urology, Volume 199, Issue Number 4, supplement, pages E1077 to E1078. The primary efficacy endpoint of TACT is the proportion of patients achieving a post-treatment PSA reduction of greater than 75% of their pre-treatment baseline value. Our pre-established performance goal for the success proportion is 50% of patients. In his presentation, Dr. Klotz reported that the median PSA reduction to date is 95%, and coincidentally, the proportion of patients that have met the PSA endpoint is also 95%. Using his words, the primary efficacy endpoint was resolutely met. With respect to safety, the rate and nature of attributed serious adverse events were similar to those reported in our phase 1 study of TULSA-PRO, which were considered very favorable. Two-thirds of the patients enrolled in TACT are intermediate-risk patients. These patients are considered to be at a level of risk such that, while therapy is recommended, the current standard of treatment with either radical prostatectomy or radiation comes with a relatively high risk of side effects such as ED and incontinence. The disease in these patients is confined within the prostate, and we believe that treating the intermediate risk population is the sweet spot for our TULSA technology due to its strong safety profile. Bottom line, we believe that the TACT trial will not only provide the clinical data that we need to file for the FDA clearance, but will also allow us to demonstrate the benefits of using our technology in the intermediate risk patients as compared to other more invasive procedures. Having said that, we also plan to conduct additional clinical trials to continue to increase the body of evidence along the lines where we see additional benefits of using our technology for these patients. Specifically, we expect to initiate a trial for salvage patients and support investigator-sponsored studies in the areas of targeted therapies or partial gland ablation as compared to TACT, which is about full gland ablation. We are also expecting more investigator-sponsored studies of TULSA-PRO to treat BPH. Coming back to TACT trial data, additional secondary endpoints of TACT are focused on quality of life side effects commonly associated with current prostate cancer therapies such as erectile dysfunction and urinary incontinence. As the standard evaluation period for these side effects is 12 months post-treatment, the sample size of evaluable patients has not yet been large enough to be assessed. We anticipate that all of the 12-month data, including the side effect data, will become available in the first half of 2019, at which point we will complete the file and submit it to the FDA for 510K de novo clearance. If all goes well and we gain approval, we expect to be in the market in the United States with TULSA-PRO in the second half of 2019. To summarize today's discussion, the TULSA-PRO U.S. clinical development program is proceeding well, and the pilot launch of TULSA and the assessment of the business model is proceeding as planned, and the pipeline for both TULSA and SonarLeave meet our expectations. This ends our prepared remarks for today. With that, we're happy to take any questions you might have. Operator?
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You also may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question is from Rahul Sargassa with Paradigm Capital. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, Arun. Good afternoon, Aaron. Thanks so much for taking my question. I have a few questions. So I guess my first question is really around getting a little more clarity on the Philips and the sales of Sonalleve in China. You mentioned that the pipeline is building and that you expect to book some revenues in the second half. Are you able to elaborate a little bit more on that first?
Sure, Rahul. Good afternoon. If you look at China, it is actually one of the few countries where focused ultrasound or image-guided focused ultrasound technology has gone beyond the infancy stage. So as we look at the country, there are approximately 100 systems already in the country and operational. Now, most of these systems are using ultrasound for imaging and not necessarily MR-guided, and we believe MR-guided will provide further clarity and accuracy to the treatment. And so the reason for this is twofold. One is the fact that we don't have to do that early evangelical work that is already done and it's accepted. And second, Philips is already well established. They have, several hundred MR systems already in place. And so I think that we are getting a bit of a running start, and that's the reason for the potential for capital sales in China in the second half of this year.
That's great. Thank you very much, and hopefully that will result in some sales traction that we'll see in the second half. My second question is really around the data that was published at the AUA, which was clearly fantastic, and of course the PSA nadir data would likely be maturing as well. Is there any more light you can shed around that data?
Sure. So, Rahul, first of all, I agree. The data, it was actually really good in the sense that we showed a reduction in PSA of 95% in 95% of the cases. But in terms of more information, I think that not only that the reduction or percentage of reduction is quite impressive, but I also think that the absolute number, the fact that the PSA is down to 0.36, is actually pretty good, because when we talk to neurologists generally, the feedback that we get is that if you're in that range of 0.3 after the procedure, that they generally, it's accepted that these patients are not likely to need a secondary or any other treatment. So it's not an absolute response to what's going to happen in the future, but I think that the absolute number is also, very important for us to put attention to. The second thing that was in the presentation that we also think was consistent with what we have talked about is the fact that the adverse events or the procedural-related adverse events were 100% resolved within the first 3 months of the treatment of the patient, which means 100% of the patients, the events were resolved. And so that, again, is very consistent with the data from phase one, which is what we've been saying so far. Everything that we've seen are consistent with phase one on all of the other topics. So I think those two points are also well worth noting about the presentation that Dr. Klotz made.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. Thank you, Arun. And just one last question before I hand the line back over. So clearly we're looking at milestones for the remainder of the year, primarily around escalating sales from the Philips Sonalleve, as well as this new sort of sales pilot with the early adopters that you talked about. Are there any other milestones that we should be looking forward to between now and the end of 2018? And that's my last question. Thank you.
Sure. I think that those are certainly the top two milestones as we go forward. I think that there are other things we expect to announce in the second half. We will be further elaborating our reimbursement strategies in the second half of this year, and we do anticipate more activity towards on Sonaleve towards regulatory approvals in other parts of the world, including the United States. So those would be the other two things that we hope to be able to announce by end of this year.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. I'll hand the line back over.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Jason Mills with Canaccord Genuity. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, Arun. This is actually Cecilia on for Jason. And I was just wondering if we could turn back to the TAC data at AUA, just what type of response you've seen from physicians in the field to the data, and maybe physicians that weren't aware previously of the technology. How much has this data kind of helped augment awareness of your technology?
Yeah, Cecilia, great question. Yes, I think that was the first, large data set with 115 patients, and that has definitely made a difference in our marketing in Europe. Not only that, we did some private sessions with urologists, and we got positive feedback on actually both points, the absolute PSA data, and also the procedural-related adverse events. Both of those have been received positive. And we've actually done two sessions since that time. One was a session in U.S. with urologists where we felt we got positive feedback. And then we've done another session in Europe with not only where they describe the data properly to the community there, but also we included a few of the users who are commercially using the product now quite extensively, which is consistent with the example that I presented in the prepared remarks, where now we do have good, healthy users. And so I do think that in that sense, the momentum has been quite positive to Cecilia.
Great, thanks. And then just turning to your current program with TULSA in Europe, I was just wondering if you could elaborate further on what you've seen Q1 and Q2 sequentially in terms of recurring revenue trends and what you've been doing on the business front that may have impacted these, and then how you view the rest of the year playing out in terms of being able to ramp utilization.
Yeah. First of all, in terms of absolute dollars, I think the dollars are very small at the moment, and I don't think you should take anything in terms of trends. As I said in the prepared remarks, we actually have orders on the books that we chose not to fill in the quarter because we just think that we should not be recognizing revenues that are, more than a few weeks. And so it just relates to that kind of aberration. It's not related to utilization in actual sense. With respect to actual utilization, we are starting to see an uptick. Using the recurring revenue model, we still have to go through the full, process of, going through all of the approval process. So I'm not 100% sure how it will impact the deal closure time at the moment. But most certainly with this model, there is an economic model that is very viable. So we're able to get across those hurdles. And so I think that, that is sort of driving the expectation that certainly we should start to see an uptick in not just the new installs, but also in utilization as we go forward.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Ben Hainer with Alliance Global Partners. Please proceed with your question.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the questions. You mentioned, Arun, that Philips and Siemens are out there in the field selling Can you give any color that, or is there any color that you might be able to share on the feedback that you're getting from them in the field?
Sure, Ben. I think as I was describing in the prepared remarks in the early part, you know, we've been kind of analyzing all of our data and where we find the, in terms of capital, that is where, you know, Philips and Siemens are stronger because they know how to sell capital. They know how to go through administration. They know how to bundle it with their MR suite and so on. And so that's where we are seeing the activity from their end. And most of that activity, and we saw that last year in particular, is really in larger hospitals where they're able to use research R&D type dollars to justify early stage technologies. That's primarily what we see with them in Europe. China is different because, as I said before, China is, I wouldn't say that has accepted the focused ultrasound ablation as a technology, but I think they're far further along on the adoption curve than any other part of the world. And so in China, we do see a very quick pipeline that was built as soon as the CFDA approval came about, that the pipeline has built quite nicely, and it does take time to obviously close, but certainly most of that pipeline at the moment is capital-based.
Okay. And that's helpful. And then, with looking at the revenue models that you guys are evaluating, it sounds like you're more focused on recurring revenue models. And you mentioned a per-click fee, but I would imagine there's also kind of a rental with a slightly higher consumable cost than a pure capital and consumable model. Can you kind of talk through that a little bit and maybe if there are different models that you're evaluating and how we should think about that?
Yes. So our primary focus in the short term is on driving adoption. So what we've basically done is we've basically given our sales team a small number of basically authorized them with a small number to say, you know, for this many sites, you know, we would like to reduce the barrier to entry in terms of capital dollars as low as possible, and then, you know, use the recurring revenue, which is about $2,500 per patient, as a way to, you know, drive the revenue. Once we complete that initial phase, you're right, we are looking at, and a number of hospitals have indicated some kind of receptivity to the potential that we would do a yearly lease rather than a purchase, where we would give them some kind of a monthly rental for a year period, and then the per use is on top of that. And I do expect that we will have, you know, a couple of systems in place along those lines also. But, you know, I think at the moment we're really, really trying to focus on adoption with the recurring revenue.
And yet, I also would, this is Aaron Turing, like that, we don't want to get too far out over our skis. The truth of the matter is, right now in Europe and China, we don't, you know, we want to carefully grow our installed base and make sure that we can service it in a highly professional manner, that customers are thrilled with the procedures when they're done and the devices, and that we're learning how to use these devices outside of the clinical trial environment in the commercial environment. So we are being very, I'd say, pedantic about the way we're approaching this to make sure that we're not just pushing devices out there to the wrong sites with the wrong users. We're highly qualifying sites, highly qualifying users. We want to make sure they'll be very successful and be there in their initial cases to make sure they're successful. There is a learning curve. It's not too bad, but we want to make sure they're highly successful. So we are being, as I said, very pedantic about it.
Well, that makes sense. And I think the thoughtful approach is probably the best in the long term. And then, you know, I know it's early days, you know, with regard to utilization. But is there anything internally that you're looking at in terms of metrics or what have you that you might think about sharing down the road once you have more experience and it's not quite as lumpy in terms of utilization patterns?
I think we're probably a little ways away from that still. We probably need 6 to 12 months. I mean, we should really be thinking, all of us, about U.S. approval and U.S. launch and metrics in the U.S. Right now, you have to realize we're a small, very small organization in Europe and even smaller in Asia, and we need to make sure we're delivering fabulous experiences for our customers. And so volume is not our game right now. Right now, our game is making sure we know how to deliver a commercial experience outside of the clinical trial environment. So realistically, we're looking at the second half of next year or even after that, that we should really start thinking about volume metrics that will demonstrate financial performance, rather than right now, where this is much more about making sure our procedures, our procedure times are coming down, our usability and user friendliness is really ready for prime time for the second half of next year when we expect approval.
Okay, fair enough. That's understandable. That's it for me. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. One moment, please, while we poll for additional questions. Our next question is from Brian Gagnon with Gagnon Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I've got a few questions for you. First, can you tell me the number of cases that these docs need to do to get proficient?
Sure. Brian, I can tell you in the first site, that number was approximately 20 cases. We think that number is now reducing to perhaps in the range of about 10 or so cases. What we are seeing is that, even though we do have some more data coming out, a number of these early adopters are kind of setting their own goals in terms of what kind of patients they want to treat in the beginning and gain some own experience. So at the moment, they are, being conservative in the way they start. But over the long haul, we think it's somewhere between, 10 to 20 cases.
Okay, that's actually pretty low. The data, just so I make sure I understand the time frame, you expect to have the full data set out, including incontinence and ED, in Q1 of 19 and file sometime in Q2?
So that's the data. The 12-month comes to an end in early February. We anticipate there will be some time to curate the data. And at this point, we expect to file in Q2, which is why we've been using the term first half. I think generally what you said is fairly accurate, right?
So we would likely have, and I can't remember exactly when it was, but AUA, I believe, is in the second quarter. Would you likely present all of it at some sort of presentation at a major medical conference?
That is exactly the idea.
That would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Next question is around the pipeline build. You mentioned that the pipeline is building nicely in China. How big an opportunity is the Chinese market? I don't really have a sense. Is it hundreds of units, thousands of units?
Brian, it is a little bit early. I think at the moment, the speed with which the pipeline is building is good, but I still want to make sure we close some of these deals and get some experience and get the word out with respect to our technology. I think China, certainly overall in terms of their top-tier hospitals, the interest level is high. They seem to have a desire to leapfrog to the latest technology. They see us as incision-free therapy, the latest technology, they see it as not only something that they can market to their affluent client in China, they actually think that they would be able to look at this as a medical tourism opportunity also. So I would just like to be a little bit cautious until we learn more. We're learning at an amazing pace. We're pretty much on a call with China every couple of days right now, and a lot of visits to China and Asia in general right now. I think we'll be able to address the specifics like this, by end of this year for sure.
Okay. I'll let you go on the reimbursement strategy because I know you guys are still working on that. But your discussions with the FDA on Sonalleve, are they progressing? Do you think you'll – I know you said you'd hope to have something to discuss with us maybe on the next call or the call after that. But do you think there's an opportunity to get FDA approval on Sonalleve in the United States?
Yes, there is. The conversations continue to be positive. They have requested certain set of data, which we believe we can provide.
I just want to clarify, the data that they're asking for is not clinical data using our device. It's not safety data. It's data on the size of markets relative to the approval.
Right.
So I don't want you taking away that we need to run a clinical trial.
Right.
It's nothing like that.
Yeah. So it's not... we think we have the clinical data. Preliminary, we think that the response is positive. We are working with them on market size data and things like that. So far, I think...
Still there?
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay. My last question is.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I understand, Arun. My last question is your go-to-market strategy for Tulsa Pro in the U.S. What are your initial thoughts?
So we're still on the same mode, thinking that, we have agreements with at least two of these MR partners. As time goes on, we will continue to look for additional MR partners. For the capital side of the equation, we would still prefer to work with partners, whereas on the recurring revenue side, where the call point is the surgeon specialty, which is where we think that we can make a much bigger impact, we expect to be, at least in the early stage, direct. We'll look at other options, but at least our mindset in the early stages to be correct for the recurring revenue side of the equation.
So you'll have clinical specialists after the equipment gets installed to drive adoption?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've reached the end of the question and answer session. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back to Arun Menawan for closing comments.
Thank you so much for the interest in our company and look forward to communicating with you at the end of the third quarter. Thank you so much.